This is a podcast from WSUM. The opinions expressed in this podcast do not reflect the views of WSUM, the University of Wisconsin-Madison, or its Board of Regents.
You're listening to the Jump Around Podcast from WSUM Sports.
We welcome you into the Jump Around Podcast here on WSUM. I'm Joey Bonadonna, Chrissy Birdsall with me, and we're joined here today by Andrew Mitchell, the Sickos Committee College Basketball Correspondent, as we are well rapidly approaching in to the NCAA Tournament, and it's the most wonderful time of the year, so we are going to take this time today to kind of look around the world of college basketball with Wisconsin in mind. But Andrew, welcome into the show.
Hello, thanks so much for having me. So happy to be here. Yes, it is the best time of the year for sure. We already have a bunch of tickets punched in the men's and women's sides, but excited to talk mainly Wisconsin today and Big Ten and our general thoughts. So excited to be here.
I do got to say, just to start off, I love all of the graphics that you guys make, whether it's beveling whichever team wins or for the teams that have their ticket punched. I'm not sure if it was supposed to look like a credential or an actual ticket, but either way, it looked kind of cool. So
it's spinning. Inspired by like Apple Wallet or I guess Google Wallet. So it's like, and if folks are checking out our Twitter account, SickosCBB, if you're not a follower, get on that. We have QR code, and it goes to a special location where you can buy some lovely apparel.
That's a good way to do it. So getting right into some Badgers basketball, obviously here at the Jump Around, we are a Madison-based podcast. But for Wisconsin's basketball, I got to start off by asking, like, what is the Sickos ranking of the Wisconsin men's basketball team this year? Because they got off to a pretty hot start, and they looked really good. But this last month has been pretty rough for the Badgers.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, tough non-con playing Tennessee and Arizona, but those were like their only losses until mid-January, basically, and Providence away, very respectable. But I would say it's looking good starting off the conference, you know, looking back at the schedule. And then I don't really know what happened chemistry-wise or if it was that Max Klesman stopped going nuts like he was in some of those early games. I couldn't tell you exactly what it was. As I try to watch like every single team in the country, which is, you know, impossible. But I would say that it's increased over the time. And it's hard to say, right? Like projecting, looking at a site like Bracket Matrix, they're a six seed, which is probably about right for their record. And, you know, usually are placed these sort of teams, you know, with 19-12, some great road wins, things like that. But if you really peel back the surface and you're like, okay, 6C doesn't seem super sicko. There's some sicko stuff going on in here. Back-to-back losses to Michigan and Rutgers, that's not what you're looking for, especially not this year's Michigan team. Full disclosure, I did go to Michigan undergrad, so this was a pretty rough year for yours truly in that regard. But I would say that's not an ideal thing to do. I think the emergence of Tyler Wall's beard, his facial hair, I don't know if this is something y'all have discussed.
Yes.
On the podcast, in person, privately, with your friends, with your loved ones, but it's not good. It must be said.
I think we were at one of the games and he started to grow the beard, and one of our Evan Schmidt, who is here at WSUM, he said as long as he keeps making his free throws, he can keep growing that beard. And he was hitting his free throws while growing the beard. So, I mean, it hasn't gone too poorly for him.
It worked for a little bit.
It worked for a little bit. But, yeah, basically kind of like around winter break, it was like, yeah, Max Klesmit shaved the facial hair and Tyler Wall started growing the beard. Like, that's the discourse that we were at that point, because, you know, there was nothing too wrong going on with Wisconsin basketball. But yeah, now all of a sudden the beard is falling by the wayside, and that's something to discuss when you're talking about the Sickos quality of Wisconsin basketball this year. Absolutely.
I'm so glad I'm not the only one that was picking up on that. Yeah. It's also something that y'all have noticed.
I feel like 2 years ago it was Chucky Hepburn's hair Mm-hmm. And when he dyed the one part red for the Big Ten tournament and the NCAA tournament. And then now it's the Tyler Wahl beard versus Max Klusman clean shaven debate.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's definitely something if you pull it back, like you said, that's something that is definitely sickos indeed, with really just the characters that we got going on here with Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think one other person to mention is AJ Storer, who's been tremendous all year. Just a different dimension to the offense for Wisconsin. It's also very funny that he was at St. John's and left. That's just very deeply funny to me, that he left Pitino behind and came over to Wisconsin to just give him a different element on the offense. And, you know, it's an intriguing story. But really what has always intrigued me Wisconsin-wise, Sickos-wise, has been Max Klusmit and the ability to call him Maximum Klusmit. Just terrific content. It's money-making, honestly.
Yeah, you mentioned AJ Storer, and really with, I feel like a lot of the St. John's outgoing transfers in general, it was kind of like, okay, AJ Storer is on that team last year. Posh Alexander was on that team last year. So many others that were like good. It was like, how was St. John's that bad last year? And then why did they not stay to play for Rick Pitino? And now they're all doing pretty well at their respective next school. So that was definitely an interesting thing. I would say more recently, in terms of Sicko's content regarding AJ Storer, senior night last week.
Forgot about this.
Yes. This was, I think, mostly caught in Wisconsin circles. I'm not sure if this was national, but he decided to kiss the floor as Tyler Wahl was leaving the floor as well. He was already on the bench. He was on the sideline. No one really caught it until after the game. Someone had asked him what he meant by that, and he said he did it for Tyler Wahl. And there are some skeptical people out there about what that was all about. And yeah, that's going to be an interesting thing to follow with AJ Storer. No one knows if he's coming back, draft, portal again. It's an interesting time to be following the AJ Storer story as well. And then, yeah, Max Klusmit, the fact that he's come in and, you know, he was one of these guys as well that he wasn't offered by Wisconsin. He was a Wisconsin kid, wasn't offered out of high school, went to go play at Wofford for 2 years. And, yeah, all of a sudden he's turned into graduated from glue guy status, as John Rothstein said during his nice run there in January. Now, it's been good, but not what we saw earlier. And I think, yeah, that regression that you saw from kind of felt everyone throughout February, that was kind of the downfall that you saw of Wisconsin. But I will say, if there is going to be someone that is an X factor for Wisconsin to keep moving on through March, it certainly is Max Klusmit to be that additional scorer. But yeah, he's definitely an interesting story as well.
I'm going to ask, as a little bit of a outsider, you know, following it from afar, from following every team in the Big Ten as a Big Ten alum and such, what's going on with Steven Crowell? Because he has some great games and some, like, weird games. I don't really understand.
I don't know.
What's up with that?
I'm, like, one of the biggest Steven Crowell truthers I know. I've said from start to finish, I think he can be at least a top three center in the Big Ten. I even said this last year when there was a guy named Hunter Dickinson in the conference. I thought that he could still be a top three center in the Big Ten. When he's on, he's on. And he can match up with, it feels like, anyone. He's done well against some pretty good centers. But then on other nights, it's just, I don't know what I'm watching. It feels like he's, I don't want to say afraid of contact, but it's like he doesn't win those battles, and it's frustrating for me because I love him, but yeah, it's like I tend to try to ignore the bad and just observe the good, but that's kind of hard as of late.
I think one of the biggest things, at least from what I've seen this year, is that this offense does really well when it revolves around Steven Crowell. If he's getting a touch on every single offensive possession, they're doing very well. I think lately the two biggest things, he's been getting into foul trouble more than usual. Now, that just might be with who he's up against. I mean, Cliff Amore earlier this week, he had Zach Edey against Purdue to close out the regular season, and he got into foul trouble very quickly against Purdue, where they were bringing in Nolan Winter, a guy like Chris Hodge, who barely plays anything during the season. They had to throw him in because of the foul trouble that Stephen Crowell was saying. But I remember this one quote from Greg Gard. It was after, I want to say it was after like the Maryland game, where Stephen Crowell had a pretty good performance. And Greg Gard basically just said that getting hit to him on the inside, on the post, that it was a mandate to the rest of the team. It wasn't even a suggestion like, hey, give it off to Stephen Crowell. He demanded it.
He like cut off the question and was like, the reporter asked him something along those lines of like, hey, what was part of the game plan to get him the ball? Just get him the ball. It wasn't a suggestion. It's a mandate. Get Stephen Crowell the basketball. And that was
the Bernie Sanders, I am no longer asking him, you know?
Yes. And I was like, I saw that, and that was the content I needed out of Greg Gard. It was after Ohio State, and that was when it felt like they were kind of starting to get back on track. And then I don't know what game was after that. Oh, it was Indiana. It was a week off, and then Indiana. Well, and then, yeah, I think we could I think the entirety of the Wisconsin-Indiana game itself could be Sicko's content.
Are you talking about the one at Assembly Hall?
Yes, the one at Assembly Hall. Fire alarms with 10 minutes left in the game. And then other Greg Gard content where he very seriously suggested that it was someone from Indiana that pulled the fire alarm.
He did that.
The game was also on Peacock, which I feel like automatically just upset status a little bit.
So if you want to, I feel like there are many games you could put out for Sicko's Game of the Year, but I feel like that one, I might be biased on it, but I feel like that's got to be in a top 10.
Yeah, I didn't know what was going on. I was, because it was on Peacock, I was watching a different game on my TV, and I saw it delayed. I was like, oh no, is there a serious injury? Like, did the roof collapse? Because there was an incident last season where, like, a bolt fell out of the Assembly Hall scoreboard. So I was like, oh no, did that happen again? No, the fire alarm was going off and everybody had to evacuate the building. Mm-hmm. So, and we follow some of the Indiana sports media, you know, student people, and they were tweeting out the images and pictures of like what's going on. It was wild. So I turned it on after that, and it was almost like the game reset after that. Yeah. So I'm sure Greg Gard was not a happy camper after
that. Yeah, and Wisconsin was on a 10-0 run. I feel like that should be addressed. And then all of a sudden, oh, fire alarm at Assembly Hall. Interesting.
It's giving that one Super Bowl, I want to say around 2012, you know, Ravens, 49ers. Yeah. Beyonce does the halftime performance, basically takes the lights out in the third quarter. And then, yeah, the Ravens were winning, and then they almost blew the game at the end there. Somehow was able to win the Super Bowl. But, yeah, it was almost the exact same scenario if it was played out at a college basketball court.
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of them to remember for sure. But, yeah, looking around the rest of the Big Ten, I kind of said this at the beginning of the year, looking at some of the Sickos teams that, first off, when you mention Sickos teams in general, Nebraska basketball, as they're more commonly called, you got to mention them, but they've been good this year. They got a first round bye, and I don't think a lot, even I, who I was particularly high on Nebraska ball this year, they got a double bye in the Big Ten tournament. What has been their status this year in terms of where they've been going here in this season?
Well, listen, they haven't made the tournament in a very long time. I think we all are aware of that. And so it was looking great at the beginning of the year, but they were only playing home games, and they played a neutral game at, shout out to the Stanford Pentagon. Are you all aware of the Stanford Pentagon?
100%.
South Dakota.
We had a very long discourse about the Stanford Pentagon.
That just brought back like a memory that
on our show last week on air, we discussed Sioux Falls, South Dakota is the capital of the most Sickos non-conference college basketball games of all time, and I love it. Wisconsin played St. Mary's there like few years ago.
I remember that.
It was a long time ago, but I've made a few trips to Sioux Falls in my lifetime. Beautiful city. I think it should be on everyone's checklist to go to Sioux Falls and to experience a college basketball game at the Sanford Pentagon. I have not yet, but I'm looking forward to the day. And then also we mentioned about Sioux Falls, about 20, 25 miles, I think, away from Sioux Falls is a town called Mitchell, South Dakota. There's a thing called the Corn Palace. And it is.
Yes.
It
I
is,
can't believe this is coming up in conversation for the second time in a week.
If you had a nickel for every... I'm kidding. No. But there is the Corn Palace. And inside of the Corn Palace, there is a basketball arena. And they play high school basketball games inside at the Corn Palace. It is just the most amazing thing that one could ever derive, ever. And I just wanted to give that a shout out. Thank you for bringing up the Sanford Pentagon. I really wanted to bring that up, but to continue on about Nebraska ball.
No, but it came to my mind because I'm looking at their schedule here, and they're only, they played a couple of good non-conference games. They played Creighton dominated them at home, but they went to 7-0 in one of those games at the beginning of the year was Oregon State at the Stanford Pentagon. So that's why it came up. And then they couldn't win a conference road game. God love them. They only won home conference games. They didn't win a single away. Oh, they beat Indiana. That was very funny. I do remember that. And they beat Michigan, which, you know, that's good for them. Good. They got it done. But I would say, yeah, very happy for them. They're going to be in, unless there's evil presence in that room. They're in to the tournament. They do have a really well-built team. You know, it's been a lot of, I'm following them the last 3-4 years, it's been a lot of in and out, you know, McGowan's coming for a one and done year, his brother on the team. They've kind of put together now a kind of cohesive unit with Mask popping for three and Tominaga, who has some amazing games and some games where he doesn't play super well. But they finally built a coherent team, and they finally played pretty good defense. They're 26th in defense this year, which is actually a lot better than I thought. I'm looking at KenPom. I don't know if y'all use KenPom as well. Hopefully, 100%. You do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm in the right place here. I don't have to justify anything. Yeah, I mean, Sanford Pentagon, I'm going to be on the podcast every week now. So, permanent squatter. But anyway, Nebraska, a very fun team to watch. We'll see how they do in these neutral environments, having struggled in a lot of these road games. It's tough to go play there in Lincoln. It is the furthest west as of right now, but next season, obviously, it won't be. We'll have all the West Coast teams joining, so that'll change the dynamics of the entire Big Ten, but it'll definitely change the dynamics of, like, oh, we have to go all the way from, you know, if you're Rutgers or Maryland, you have to go all the way out to Nebraska. Now you have to fly all the way across the country. But anyway, I think that they're the history of them, and like I put in the notes, like the history of them and Northwestern, if you remove the names from the teams, there wouldn't be that much sicko inherently about these two stories. And we didn't talk that much about Northwestern. We can if you would like. But if you pull the names off, I don't think that they're that sicko. But then you put the names back on the teams and you're like, oh, the second and third and the third and fourth best teams in the Big Ten are Nebraska and Northwestern. Like, what is happening here?
I will say
it was that kind of year in the Big Ten.
If there's a point that you want to say broke Wisconsin basketball, it was the rink mast step back three to, I believe, tie the game like late in that game in Lincoln. I would say that was playing at the Vault was the beginning of the downfall for Wisconsin basketball. But yeah, now Northwestern is on their path as well. They got to go through Rutgers or Maryland first to get there. But now Northwestern, they're a good team. They have good talent, but now all of a sudden they're injured. They're relying on walk-ons to try and get them through and round out a solid rotation. That's going to be a team to watch. Obviously, they have the legend of Boo Booey. And Ryan Langborg, who was part of that Princeton team last year, he's back from injury. So that's going to be a team to watch in terms of seeing them through in this tournament. I think if they can start to get healthy, that's going to be an interesting team to watch for sure.
Langborg's been falling out lately with the increased minutes load because of Ty Berry's injury. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to see how they perform. They don't really have a presence inside, which I think will hurt them. Nicholson is okay, but I don't know.
He's been hurt too, I think.
Yeah, he's been out. He hasn't really been playing that much. And they would have Behrens, Robbie Behrens, but he transferred to, Virginia Tech. So he was on the team last year, and he played some pretty good minutes, and he can pop too for three, but he's no longer there. But yeah, they're really, like, you exactly agree with what you said, that they're really relying on Boo Boo to kind of really carry them.
Right. I think the one team that I want to give a special shout out to, I mean, look, they're a big name brand. Everybody knows who they are. They're going to be good year in and year out. But Michigan State has been like the most interesting case study I've ever seen in my life, because their metrics are so good, but their record is not. I mean, I think everybody at this point has forgotten that they lost to JMU in that first game to open the year. And then it just has kind of gone downfall from there. You know, Wisconsin was able to beat them twice before they ended up falling off. They're coming into the NCAA tournament losing four of their last five, including at Indiana to close the season. It is a really interesting case study for me, because I think everybody thinks they're going to be in the tournament because, look, it's Michigan State, it's, you know, Izzo, it's everything like that. But this is a team that is just not playing up to their potential. But the one shout-out I do want to give out to is Steven Izzo, obviously Tom Izzo's son. We had a little bit of a discussion going because, and the topic of coaches' sons, Isaac Gard, Greg Gard's son, also plays for the Badgers. So we wanted to see which coach's son was going to make a basket first. Izzo got it. Gard has not been able to make a basket so far yet, but...
And then there's Hoiberg's son, who's actually, like, carving out a decent role with Nebraska.
He's actually good.
He's good.
He's actually good.
And I feel bad for Isaac Gard, because the day that he scores a basket, it, like, I feel like no one really follows it quite as closely as the other two, because of the fact of, like, I think just the magnitude of the name Izzo and the fact that Hoiberg's part of the lineup. But the day that Isaac Gard scores a basket, I think, number one, it means Wisconsin probably won by a large margin. So that'd be a great day. But, yeah, that's one that I'm going to keep an eye on for the next 2 years, likely. But, yeah, coaches' sons, that's an interesting
All right, are you ready for the rabbit hole here?
Okay.
I've done some Googling. Isaac Gard also looks like he's about 11 years old.
That is...
And from a town called Oregon, which is, I guess, just south of Madison. I'm sure y'all know where that is. Mm-hmm. But they're not the Ducks?
No, they're not.
They're like this panther that looks like it was made on Microsoft Paint. Like, what is this?
The Madison area high school mascots are pretty incredible. I do want to give a shout out to my Stoughton Vikings.
I will dive into this at all times. Like, you don't want me to go down this rabbit hole of looking into Wisconsin high school mascots. But yeah, Oregon, Wisconsin being one of them in the Madison area. I could go into so many others, but yes, I think that in itself is a great thing to dive into when discussing Isaac Gard.
In terms of Michigan State, really quick, I think Wisconsin won both of those games because Wisconsin has bigs. Michigan State does not have bigs. Malik Call does not count as a big. He's a wing. The fact that Jackson Kohler plays minutes at all, not to be mean or rude or obnoxious, he's not good at basketball. Mami Sissoko is a good rebounder, but also doesn't do anything on offense. Carson Cooper should not play either. So they don't really have any bigs. And they're very reliant on the guards. I don't know if y'all saw the quote from Tom Izzo about the players appearing on magazine covers. That was extremely funny and hilarious to me. But yeah, I think the tweet and exactly how Chrissy was putting it, like, how many losses can you stack up as a name brand with a couple of bad losses, including to JMU, never forgetty, in terms of that, yeah. So they're 10-10 in the conference, 18-13 overall. They do have some decent wins. They beat Baylor, good for them. They beat Illinois at home, congratulations. But I think they're in. I do think that they're a lock, especially because they're Michigan State, and that's how the tournament likes to operate. If a team is on the bubble, like the year where Michigan State and UCLA played in the first four, those kind of teams are going to be in. But like if they're in and a team like Indiana State isn't in, I'm going to be pretty upset.
Absolutely. Everybody wants to see Kareem Abdul-Jabbar make it into the NCAA tournament. But I want to hit on one more team before we actually start talking about those bids. Rutgers, my home state, love the Scarlet Knights. They were supposed to be really, really bad this year. But they're not terrible. They're just playing Rutgers style of ball. 296 in KenPom offense, fourth in defense. That is the Rutgers way, everybody.
For the longest time, I think they were still, like, they were in the 300s in offense before the emergence of Jeremiah Williams. But, yeah, they made their emergence into not having the three in the first number of their ranking. But
they're between Portland State and Coastal Carolina on offense. And on defense, they're between Tennessee and North Carolina.
Right.
That is the Rutgers up, way.
That's Jersey Mike's basketball, baby. But yeah, they're an interesting watch. The defense is really good, and it does keep them in games. And Cliff Amari is a very good player. I just feel like next year is going to be the year. I don't know who's leaving and who's staying, like who had their senior night. I didn't watch that game, unfortunately. And who's going to head off to the great beyond to potentially not live in New Jersey anymore. But anyway, whoa. I would say,
what's wrong with New Jersey?
You don't live in New Jersey York, now.
Sorry. Oh,
gotta get
some
shots in. Sorry, human nature. But anyway, the freshmen that they have coming in are going to be serious business. So they're a team to look out for next year for sure. But this year, borderline NIT potential. We'll see.
I said the same thing. I was like, this is certainly like just like a gap year for them because they were on the bubble last year. Next year, they have all this five-star talent coming in. But this year, it's like, what are they? I don't think they're awful. I think a team that has Cliff Amori on it is good enough to be like competitive in games and give you a pest every now and then, as obviously we saw with Wisconsin at the rack. But yeah, I mean, Gavin Griffiths.
Love Gavin Griffiths.
He was wearing rec specs. He's been doing it all season, but he did it against Wisconsin.
He's like a sickos team, second teamer with those specs. I mean,
he is like a near five-star talent, but he just happens to wear rec specs, which is awesome.
He can hit it, too, from deep.
Mm-hmm. And
he's a good shooter.
We mentioned Jeremiah Williams. He was not available for most of the season, but he will be back. Likely for next year, always within the world of the transfer portal. You never know, but he should be back. He's on slated to at least. And then, yeah, that second, third rated recruiting class in the class of 24, it might be one.
They got the first and the third best players.
But still, like, I think Duke and Kentucky are one and two, but Rutgers is at three. That should not be happening with Rutgers basketball, but here it is, and here we are. We are going to enter into that era next year. Obviously, don't
Cooper
know.
Flag, you know what you got to do, baby. Cooper Flag, if you're listening, Rutgers,
stay in the north. I said, yeah, I was fully on the main Black Bears trend for Cooper Flag.
That would have been incredible to watch. That would have been absolutely incredible to watch. But I feel like the thing that everybody forgets too is that they were supposed to have a couple of other players be back, but like someone like Paul McKahee takes a trip across. He's from New Jersey, goes to Rutgers, and then in his final year, makes a lateral move across the country to Washington. Now, how is Washington doing this year? Like, is that even? I feel like is that even like it's like a downgrade.
I wouldn't say downgrade, but I'd say
not an improvement.
Yeah, I would say playing in the Pac-12 this year, like the Pac-12 in basketball. If you're looking for I think the Big Ten in general. Again, bias, but. The Pac-12 is Arizona and crickets.
This year's Washington James. State, too. Ronnie James comes off the bench. Don't even go there. I'm not trying to even give a hot take. Like, come on.
Weird things happen in Pullman, Washington. That's something that we've learned pretty
yes,
often.
Yes, you did. You really did. You
in
really
football
did.
The last 2 years. So, but
you really did.
Yeah, I would say going to the Pac-12 from Rutgers and the talent that they do have coming in. Cam Spencer's another one. I don't really know if I blame Cam Spencer from going from Rutgers to the defending national champions, but that's one that they lost in the portal. But yeah, the Paul Mulcahy situation, where literally in the twilight of the transfer portal decides to leave and go somewhere else in a lateral move. I don't know the whole situation on that, but that was interesting. I just found it a weird year for roster construction for Rutgers, but I can't necessarily blame them because of all the talent they have coming in next year.
Can I give a sickos update? This is something we do on our main podcast.
Absolutely. Go for it.
It's UConn and Georgetown are playing in the women's side for the final of the Big East with a bid on the line. Last check, it was UConn 42, Georgetown 13.
Yeah.
I like Georgetown, though. This is a good story going into the final.
Yeah, very, very, very emotional.
They tried.
They tried their best.
They tried.
Yeah, they tried their darndest, for sure.
Speaking of, like conferences, I mean, obviously, this was a few days ago, recording this on a Monday, but, you know, earlier this week, Pepperdine University. One of the best performances I've ever seen. Now, one of our former WSUM alums works at Pepperdine. He's a graduate assistant. I believe he calls some games there.
Wow.
I don't know if he was working that game specifically, but we saw lots of photos and tweets coming from him. I mean, let's just talk about like all the conferences here, because it's been a pretty wild
week
already.
The West Coast Conference, honestly, for me, as like a college basketball nut, those West Coast conferences, like, not the West Coast Conference, but the conferences on the West Coast are just like peak sicko to me, because they always play their games at like 11 o'clock Central Time, and you're watching their games into the, you know, early hours of the following morning. And yeah, I love the WCC. I love the Mountain West. I love all that. But yeah, if you know something about Pacific, who is their opponent, they have not won a Division I game since early December. Guess who they beat this year? You want to take a guess as to what power conference team they've beaten? They've beaten a power conference team. Just take a guess.
I did know this. I double checked, but I did know this.
All right, Andrew,
Christy,
go for
remember?
It. No, I have no
do you remember
reflection.
It was November 10th. Put yourself back in November. Wow, young season. The 0-1 Pacific team headed into Cal Berkeley and won.
And Cal hasn't been horrible this year either in the Pac-12. It's like they are a team that you don't really want to, at least in terms of the Pac-12. They're a team you don't really want to play against, but they lost.
Fardaz Amek is like really good.
Yeah. Yeah. And they
really good
run into
a red hot Pacific team.
Red hot Pacific team. I think they had just beaten it was the next game after that. It's just Pacific, and especially I think a lot of those low major, and I don't consider the WCC a low major, but they're a bad team in a mid-major. They go in and they play all these non-D1 games in December, and that's kind of it for their non-conference. It's just, it's weird. Like, that's just peak sicko. I remember, I think it was Cal State Fullerton was playing a team called Stanton, and Stanton is like literally like a strip mall. Like the school, it does not, the campus does not even exist. Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah, we had Portland Bible last year. If y'all remember,
right.
Yep. Playing Portland State, and they lost by like 100 points. Yeah.
The NDSU game, I don't know what school it was. I can't remember the name of it, but NDSU beating up on whoever that was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I do recall that. Let me check the name.
I love the D1, non-D1 games. They're always blowouts, and the team that wins, it usually hurts your season way more than it helps you.
Yeah.
Not even close.
Oak Hill Christian.
Yeah, that was it.
It was NDSU 108-14 for Oak Hill Christian. So probably not a shout-out to Oak Hill Christian.
Yeah, they're like,
condolences.
Please. I just can't believe you're shouting out the West Coast, where, Andrew, you can definitely back me up on this. America East and the NEC, the two best.
What about the MAAC?
Oh, the MAC? Yeah.
MACtion?
I used to be a huge MAC fan. Obviously, they play their tournament down in Atlantic City. But after Monmouth University left for the Coastal, now I believe.
CAA?
Yes.
Yeah.
He used to be Colonial, now it's Coastal.
Mm-hmm.
After they had left, my fandom of the MAC has definitely decreased, as I am a Monmouth area native. And I have to go for the bench warmers of 2014.
Yes, the bench mob. Yes, shout out. Big shout out.
But the MAC is great, but the NEC has been absolutely incredible for anybody that follows conference realignment. St. Francis Brooklyn last year, a team of the NEC, disbanded their entire athletic program on a random Wednesday afternoon. I think it came within a day of the St. Francis Battle of the Century, in which the men's and women's basketball programs both played each other on the same mm-hmm. day. St. Francis PA took the cake in both of those. Then you bring up Stonehill, who was a Division II, and Merrimack, who also came from Division II. Now, Merrimack mm-hmm. is eligible this year for the NCAA tournament. Have to see maybe if they can get it.
And I believe there's a certain Midwest school going to the NEC next year.
Yes, there is.
Chicago State.
Chicago State in a conference.
Speaking of Chicago State, they beat Northwestern this year. I feel like that is a game that gets forgotten. They beat Northwestern, a ranked Northwestern, at Welsh Ryan Arena.
They also beat Stetson, who is going to the tournament.
Yeah. I picked that game at the beginning of the year because of Chicago State. I wanted to do that broadcast. Did it. But it was like, it was the week leading up to that game. They beat Northwestern, and I'm like, what happens when they come in here to the Kohl Center and beat Wisconsin? And then it was not particularly close. I think Wisconsin
80-53.
Yeah, like Wisconsin won pretty decisively. But that whole week of following Chicago State was unbelievable. Like they're going to make a great addition to the NEC, and I don't know. Apparently, they want to add football soon. We'll see where that goes. But this is March. We're talking college basketball.
12-18. Put them in.
Put them in.
Put them in. The NIT. Put them in. You're hearing. Speaking of postseason tournaments, obviously the Big Ten tournament taking place on Wednesday. Rutgers and Maryland being one of the tip-offs. I also believe it's Michigan, Penn State. Do we see any bid stealers coming out of the Big Ten, or is it going to be rock and chalk with either Purdue or Illinois at this point?
Okay, so hear me out. The hottest teams in the Big Ten right now are Indiana, Purdue, and Ohio State. Purdue will probably make it to the final, but on the bottom half of the bracket, if you're following along at home, if Michigan loses to Penn State, if Penn State wins, they play Indiana. I feel like the winner of that game actually matches up decently well against Nebraska, especially like we discussed earlier, Nebraska neutral site, unclear how they'll do. So I think the winner of Indiana, Penn State, I would actually put them in the semifinals against probably Illinois, unless Ohio State plays really well. We'll see. I feel like the bottom half of that, I'm not tempted to pick Illinois to make the final, and I'm not tempted to pick Nebraska to make the final. So I feel like that's where the chaos will be. And I believe those are the evening slot games that will be on in the afternoon, Thursday and Friday especially. I think those are must-see TV, and thankfully on BTN and not on Peacock if you don't have Peacock. But $2 for students to get a Peacock, so your boy has Peacock.
I think that, I mean, we saw it last year with Penn State, and Penn State felt like a team last year that they were close to winning like some of those big games, especially against Wisconsin.
Michael Scrisbury is a damn good coach. He's a really good coach.
I was very excited about the future of Penn State basketball, and then of course he leaves for Notre Dame. And not to say that I think that's a good move for him, being an Indiana guy. To go back to
not in the Big Ten, we don't care.
Not in the Big Ten, exactly. We don't care.
Conference,
but still, I was hoping that he'd stick around in the Penn State. But yeah, Penn State this year, I don't like Ace Baldwin's good. I don't know about the rest of the team. Kanye Clary's no longer with them.
Yeah,
they. I feel like that's a team that I wouldn't want Wisconsin to run into. But going back to last year, they made it to the final, and on that run, I felt like they played themselves into a bid, and they went to the Sweet 16. No, sorry, they went to the round of 32. I'd picked them to go to the Sweet 16.
Yeah, they beat A&M. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't know. I feel like you don't necessarily have to win the conference to steal a bid. If you get those quality wins, I don't know. Maybe in Ohio State with the Jake Diebler magic can make it happen this year. They're a talented team, Ohio State. It's just I don't know what it is. They couldn't put it together, but now all of a sudden they kind of are. I feel like that's a team that you want to look out for with Jake Diebler and that newfound excitement and energy inside the program. See where it goes.
I feel like
the winner – the winner of Ohio State, Iowa has a real chance to like make the tournament, like make the big dance. Cause they all have a win against the other one. And then they have the chance to play Illinois. And if they play Illinois tough, close, come out with the win, then, I mean, what would Iowa be? They would be, if they get those two wins, they would be 20-13. And if Ohio State gets the win, I mean, you know, not all wins are equal, but at Ohio State would be 21-12, pretty good. Ohio State has some bad losses, but it's a new day. The five-game losing streak is in the past, and they've beaten Michigan State, Nebraska, Michigan, and Rutgers here of late. They're playing pretty well. Like you said, Joey, they have talent, so we'll see what happens. KenPom likes Ohio State to win, so that's also going to be a really good game.
I
think the bottom of that tournament is going to be really fun.
I would be more excited for Ohio State basketball than Iowa basketball. Just for reasons that'll be left unnamed.
Right.
Well, you know, Fran McCaffrey.
I mean, obviously,
this is a partisan group, but Fran McCaffrey going crazy is extremely fun.
I'd be okay if he just gives his heart a little rest and, you know, he can coach the NIT in March and just not have to be so stressed out all the time. I think Fran McCaffrey just needs a little bit of a break.
And Ohio State's they got the interim to coach,
yep,
right?
And they got a nice young spry Jake Diebler that he can handle that pressure. I think Fran McCaffrey needs a little
not
break.
Not at Iowa.
Yeah. I forgot that Wisconsin was the final game before they made that coaching change.
Yep. So I remember saying I was sitting at that game. I was in the 300 level, and I'm watching the game, and I noticed in the second half that Chris Holtmann was sitting on the bench, and Jake Diebler was calling the offense. And I bringing up Evan again, I'm sitting at that game with him. I turn to him, like, Chris Holtmann is not coaching this game right now. Like, did something happen? And then
probably called him at halftime. Was like, hello.
The next day comes out that Ohio State is firing Chris Holtmann, and lo and behold, Greg Gard, the silent assassin, struck for Chris Holtmann's career in Columbus. And, we might have seen it in the second half at Wisconsin, at the Kohl Center. It all comes full circle. Run from it, hide from it. Wisconsin, they find a way, and they will be in some of these sicko conversations.
I mean, they have to give them probably – they couldn't have given them the notice, you know, far ahead, because I'm thinking of earlier, I think it was either earlier today or earlier yesterday, Kayla Ard from Utah State women's program there, lost in the Mountain West, and goes in to the press conference, answer questions, and says that she got fired right before
there,
she walked
there
in.
There are tarmac firings. People believe that Herm Edwards from Arizona State was fired on the field, like before he even left the field against Eastern Michigan.
I can't actually, but it's funnier that way.
Yeah, that one he got fired before he even left the field. And then, this one in the locker room at a road game, is it possible? It could be possible. But Jake Diebler, he's figured it out. And, hey, Ohio State, they played pretty well in that second half against Wisconsin. So you're seeing that maybe Jake Diebler, if he would have been the guy all the way around, who knows? They could be in a different situation right now. I think that they should give him a decent look at being the next guy at Ohio State. I think they'll go somewhere else because there are a lot of good coaches that have Ohio roots. But I think at least you got to give him a look. If he gets this team to the tournament, it's going to be a really hard decision to move on from him.
If they hire Sean Miller, I just would not attend games. That would be a disaster.
I said an outside shot would be Pat Kelsey from Charleston.
That would be smart.
He's an Ohio guy. He went to Xavier. Kind of has the Ohio connections, but he's been proving that he's a program builder. I don't know if I can say the same about Sean Miller. I mean, I can about 15 years ago before, you know, Sean Miller things. And now it's just like, I don't know how much excitement that would bring of hiring him. I would go somewhere else. Obviously, since I'm proposing Jake Diebler to be hired, you see where I stand. But yeah, I would agree with you. I don't think Sean Miller should be the guy.
Are there strong takes from either of you on who you'd rather play between Rutgers and Maryland?
Rutgers, because we've seen them twice at this point.
Yeah,
and
I think Maryland, they were not hitting their threes, and then all of a sudden they were against us, and they made it really interesting. I think Rutgers on a new, like, Rutgers at the rack.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely different story. But I think you saw that as long as Wisconsin is hitting their shots, at least at an average rate, they should be able to handle a team like Rutgers pretty easily. And I think obviously you saw like some, you know, games from Kamari McGee that you probably won't see, but it just showed that if you see everyone else start to figure it out, and as they were earlier in the year, I think that's a team that you can match up pretty well with. If you can score on them, you're probably not going to get them to score in response very well, so you can go on runs against a team like Rutgers.
I feel a little more confident with Rutgers going into it. I think Maryland will be more likely. I just don't want to see Jameer Young and Julian Reese again, because I feel like now that they've gotten a Wisconsin game under their belt, I think they would be able to game plan a lot better.
Yeah.
And I think that, yeah,
and
they were
shots. I was extremely high on Maryland at the beginning of the season. I think I had them fourth in the Big Ten because I just loved the talent they had coming back. I love Jameer Young. I love the freshman talent. But yeah, Kevin Willard just hasn't been able to figure it out this year at Maryland. But still, that's a really talented
Scott. I don't know what's going on with that. It's like, I don't really understand why he's not way better.
It
doesn't really make any sense.
It's always interesting. You can try to project at the beginning of the season all you want, but there's always going to be someone that underperforms drastically, someone who overperforms, and then that changes your projections for the next year. And it's always hard. But yeah, Maryland was one of those teams where it felt like they played a really great brand of basketball last year, and then all of a sudden this year, the puzzle didn't work, and that's where they sit right now. But when it comes to the tournament, I always kind of like, okay, the team that's more talented down the stretch, I think is going to be a matchup you don't really want to face up with.
All right, give me Rutgers third time in a row.
Yeah,
I think
I'd feel a lot more confident playing Rutgers, especially because it's not at Jersey Mike's. It's, you know, at the Target Center, a little bit more closer to our wheelhouse.
Yeah,
I'd like to see how many Rutgers fans make the trek out from New Jersey to Minneapolis.
And they got some connections.
Well, yeah, Rutgers fans are everywhere.
Yeah,
you'd be surprised at the Rutgers reach, they like to call it. I don't think that's actually what they call it.
Chrissy Birdsall calls it that.
That's what I call
trademark it.
Yeah,
trademark it.
Hey, I would love to see Rutgers be good. I think it's going to happen next year, which is going to be great for college basketball, because when Rutgers is good, everybody else is happy. Right before the COVID canceled the tournament, it's actually coming up on 4 years to the
today.
Day. 4 years.
No, tomorrow, to the but today mm-hmm. was the day that the world kind of came to an end with Mr. Rudy Gobert. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Rutgers was a top 25 team there and probably would have went to the Final Four that year. That's all I'm saying about Rutgers basketball, and we're going to end it there. But moving on
to our final topic,
we're going to talk about that one of the breaking pieces of news that came out from the Wisconsin men's basketball team about a week ago. They will be playing in the Greenbrier tip-off of the great state of West Virginia. They'll be playing Pittsburgh, UCF, and a team not yet to be named.
Let's go team four.
Absolutely. I've never heard of the Greenbrier before this announcement came out. And apparently this is some really nice hotel that they're going to just stick a basketball court on.
I you know, you see all the you see there are Wisconsin fans upset by the fact that this is the, you know, mid, you know, what the non-conference tournament they're playing in this year. It's like you're playing in the middle of the mountains in West Virginia. That sounds so prestigious. And like, you look at the Green Brier and it's like, oh, this is just a really nice hotel in the foothills of the Appalachians. And it doesn't have to, you don't have to play in Hawaii or the Bahamas to be a prestigious, like, this is a pretty nice location for, you know, late November.
Doesn't matter what your location is. You're still playing in a ballroom.
Yep.
In some kind of hotel. Yep.
That's the world of Feast Week and why I love it so much. But yeah, this is a new one. And yeah, I'm very interested for this one. They get to play. We already know Wisconsin's playing Stanford this year in San Jose. We know they're playing Arizona here in Madison. But then these are two other ones. These are two other ones that you add to the schedule. And when you can start to piece together a non-conference schedule, I don't care where it is, you can start to piece it out before the next season. The first season's already over. That's always my favorite part. So
I'm just really excited for Team 4. That's extremely funny. So the only reason I knew about the Green Brier tip-off is they did play a game here this year. It was like a Radford and I think Marshall played in this season. And so it was like a one, everybody was thinking it was like a one-off sort of thing, but no, they're starting this invitational. So shout out to them. I mean, there's already one in Asheville in North Carolina. That one's at an arena though, not at a ballroom. So this one is just like, you could see the photo here for the both of you. This one's just in a ballroom. So folks, it's exciting. Really exciting times.
It looks small too, like even the seating there and like the photo that you sent us, there's not that much seating there. I mean, Battle for Atlantis, when they played there a year ago, they had some decent stands in there. I mean, obviously small.
I will give it the benefit of the doubt that there could be more like in the not pictured part.
Joey, there aren't.
Oh, okay. Then
it's like 300 people.
Okay.
Battle for Atlantis has like probably 3,000 seats. But they're not good seats because they can't go that high because it's in a ballroom. But this one, I think it's literally just
friends and family. Put down the a friends and family floor. Tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Friends and family tournament. See who brings the most energy. So it's Wisconsin, UCF. What were the other?
Pittsburgh. And Team 4.
Okay, so Pittsburgh.
Team four.
I am.
Probably going to be a Big East team.
Yeah, you can only put any guesses as to who that one's going to be. But I don't know. I look at those teams. I hope Johnny Hawkins doesn't get fired. I like Johnny Hawkins at UCF. Pitt, kind of also the same thing. Like, they are, I think that's a team that can go on a run the ACC tournament. If you're picking the field in against Duke or North Carolina this year, Pitt's a team that I think that can make a run in the ACC tournament. So I think these are some pretty quality teams that are coming into Green Brier next year, and then see what happens with Team 4. But yeah,
Team 4.
Is a tournament that I'm very much looking forward to.
I'm really hoping that we get sent down for that one. I want to go to the great state of West Virginia. An experience.
I would be very interested to see what the travel would be like to get there.
Yeah, what's the nearest
Yeah, what
airport?
Is the nearest city to the Green Bay?
Well, I just checked how far it is from my location in the good old state of Ohio, and it's kind of far. It looks like the closest like airport is like for y'all to fly from Wisconsin. I don't know. I honestly couldn't even tell you if there's like an airport.
I would like to make a correction. They are not
Richmond.
They're not in the Appalachians. It's in the Allegheny Mountains, which I didn't know the Allegheny Mountains. I just thought it was all
the Appalachian.
Like Appalachia, whatever. It was all kind of the same thing. But yeah, apparently located in the Allegheny Mountains. So I will make a correction on that.
This looks like you're going to be driving, folks.
Yeah.
If you're going to this one.
Hey, I will
to sit in a picnic table chair.
Road trip.
I will make the road trip out there.
The minivan with the seats that turn around the third row. Yes.
You need to pick. Hopefully it's one of the ones where the seats come out of the minivan, and then you can just put the seats courtside.
That would be incredible. That would be absolutely incredible. But we got a few more minutes here before the end of this episode. And speaking of ballroom tournaments, do you guys have a favorite of a ballroom? I mean, the only one that I could think of off the top of my head was the Battle for Atlantis Hotel. I know there's a few out in Las Vegas. Obviously, Hawaii's got some stuff out there too. But is there any ballroom that sticks out to you in particular?
So I think some aren't necessarily ballrooms, but they're like these smaller arena. I will bring that into it, like, okay, saying the smaller arenas. I don't know, because I wasn't made aware, like, with the Fort Myers tip-off this year for Wisconsin, I didn't know there was a separate division that played in the Fort Myers tournament. In the same court, I don't know what it was, but, like, I didn't know that part existed when we looked at it. We were just told West Virginia, Virginia, and SMU, and I don't know, that's kind of one that I kind of just was looking at this year. And there's also a women's side, kind of the same thing, multiple divisions. They play in I'm pretty sure the home of FGCU basketball down there as well. So I don't know, that was one that was kind of near and dear to me this year. That was one that Wisconsin was able to win the championship this year. So I don't know, that's one I'll throw in there.
Andrew, you got a favorite?
I personally, yeah, I live for these preseason, non-conference, multi-team events in random locations scattered throughout the world at this point. There was a women's game this year in Paris, Notre Dame in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. It was in like a 5,000-seat arena. That was cool. There's some in Mexico at the Hard Rock in the Riviera Maya. I think that's kind of like a ballroom sort of for Atlantis sort of setup. But I know it's not a ballroom, but got to shout out the Lahaina Civic Center. Shout out to the people of Maui as well. Hopefully you're all doing better, recovering and whatnot. But that's my pick for these kind of events. I know I'm cheating. I apologize for cheating, but I can't not pick Maui. And shout out as well again to the Sanford Pentagon.
I think that's been more one-offs going on at the Sanford Pentagon lately. Mm-hmm. But I think
I'm going next year, by the way. So y'all are invited. It's
Iowa, Utah, right?
Something like that.
Yeah.
So,
hey, there's Iowa basketball. It's not an awful drive. It's about a 6-hour drive from Madison. So it's not bad.
That's actually closer than I thought.
It's a better drive than I feel driving to the Green Brewer would be. So you're just driving through. You get a nice view driving in through like the Mississippi River in southwest Wisconsin. And then southern Minnesota is just absolutely nothing. And then you cross into eastern South Dakota, which, again, not much going on in eastern South Dakota except Sanford Pentagon and the Corn mm-hmm. Palace. So
yes,
I feel like that's an amazing trip.
So what I'm hearing is that in the next few years, we need a South Dakota Invitational.
Yes.
And the two divisions take place.
How about the semifinals? You play them at the Corn Palace, and then the final goes to the Sanford Pentagon. Cinema. Absolute cinema.
Joey's full of great ideas here, Andrew, if you've got that already down. He is the true sicko, at least between the two of us. I mean,
I feel like we said this, you're more of the college football sicko, and then I'm the college basketball sicko that sits down and watches the first round of every conference tournament. I feel like that should be taken, like people should just be doing that in general. But I don't know. Some people feel like they just want to judge you for that. And it's like, no, this is college basketball in its unbridled, uncensored form. And it is awesome.
Hey, I watched Austin Peay a few days ago.
The beginning of the A-Sun tournament, like, incredible. I don't think you can script that any better. It was...
Those games were so good.
And they were all, like, back-to-back-to-back. If there was a time that at least I'm not aware of it, and if it is, I feel sorry for myself. There should be an ESPN Plus multi-view so that I can watch all four of those games or whatever games that are going on at the same time. But yeah, that's what I need.
We all need quad box capability.
Yeah.
All right, Andrew, we're going to be wrapping up here. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about college basketball. Tournament's going to be taking place throughout the rest of the week, heading into the NCAA tournament. Wishing everybody here a perfect bracket, or a perfect Sickos bracket if that is coming back. We'll have to see.
Yeah, make sure you fill out your polls. Go to the Sickos College Basketball page on Twitter. And we have tweeted out that you can fill out your top 10 of the Sickos poll. So get those in. Make sure you vote for individual unique things or teams so that we can make our own bracket.
I'm voting Green Bay in. We didn't get a chance to talk about them. Green Bay's going in.
Put in the Phoenix.
Yep. All right. Well, we'll close it out here. Thank you very much, Andrew. Thank you all very much for tuning in to this episode of the Jump Around Podcast. And stay tuned for upcoming episodes. But this has been Joey Bonadonna alongside Chrissy Birdsall signing off here from the Jump Around Podcast.
Thanks to David Giardino and Isabel Kramer for contributing the music for this podcast.